Chapter 13. 18 centuries. Apostrophe, apostrophe, all God, God good, good God, truth, bones, liver, one of a series alone, and without equal it is amazing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you may well say it, sir. Yet it is but the truth. This American lady, our revered and sacred founder, is distinctly referred to and her coming prophesied in the 12th chapter of the Apocalypse. She could not have been more plainly indicated by St. John without actually mentioning her name. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how strange, how wonderful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I will quote her own words, for her A to the Scriptures colon the 12th chapter of the Apocalypse has a special suggestiveness in connection with this 19th century. There, do you note that? Think, note it well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but what does it mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, listen, and you will know. I quote her inspired words again, colon in the opening of the sixth seal, typical of 6,000 years since Adam. There is one distinctive feature which has special reference to the present age. Thus, Revelation Isaiah 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. That is our head, our chief, our discoverer of Christian science. Nothing can be plainer, nothing surer. And note this. Revelation Isaiah 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of God. That is Boston. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I recognize it, madam. These are sublime things and impressive. I never understood these passages before. Please go on with the proofs. Apostrophe, apostrophe, very well. Listen. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book. A little book, merely a little book, could words be modester? Yet how stupendous its importance. Do you know what book that was? Apostrophe, was it apostrophe, I hold it in my hand, Christian science. Apostrophe, apostrophe, love, livers, lights, bones, truth, kidneys, one of a series, alone and without equal it is beyond imagination and wonder. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hear our founder's eloquent words, colon, then will a voice from harmony cry, go and take the little book, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mortal, obey the heavenly evangel. Take up divine science. Read it from beginning to end. Study it, ponder it. It will be indeed sweet at its first taste, when it heals you. But murmur not over truth, if you find its digestion bitter. You now know the history of our dear and holy science, sir, and that its origin is not of this earth, but only its discovery. I will leave the book with you and will go now, but give yourself no uneasiness. I will give you absent treatment from now till I go to bed. Apostrophe, apostrophe. 3. Under the powerful influence of the near treatment and the absent treatment together, my bones were gradually retreating inward and disappearing from view. The good word took a brisk start now, and went on quite swiftly. My body was diligently straining and stretching, this way and that, to accommodate the processes of restoration, and every minute or two I heard a dull click inside, and knew that the two ends of a fracture had been successfully joined. This muffled clicking and gritting and grinding and rasping continued during the next 3 hours, and then stopped. The connections had all been made. All except dislocations. There were only 7 of these. Hips, shoulders, knees, neck. So that was soon over. One after another they slipped into their sockets with a sound like pulling a distant cork, and I jumped up as good as new, as to framework, and sent for the horse doctor. I was obliged to do this, because I had a stomach ache, and a cold in the head, and I was not willing to trust these things any longer in the hands of a woman whom I did not know, and in whose ability to successfully treat mere disease I had lost all confidence. My position was justified by the fact that the cold Antiochi had been in her charge from the first, along with the fractures, but had experienced not a shade of relief, and indeed the ache was even growing worse and worse, and more bitter now, probably on account of the protracted abstention from food and drink. The horse doctor came, a pleasant man and full of hope, and professional interest in the case. In the matter of smell he was pretty aromatic, in fact quite horsey, and I tried to arrange with him for absent treatment, but it was not in his line, so out of delicacy I did not press it. He looked at my teeth, and examined my hock, and said my age and general condition were favorable to energetic measures. Therefore he would give me something to turn the stomach ache into the bots, and the cold in the head into the blind staggers. Then he should be on his own beat, and would know what to do. He made up a bucket of bran mash, and set a dipper full of it every 2 hours, alternated with a drench with turpentine and axle grease in it, would either knock my ailments out of me in 24 hours or so interest me in other ways, as to make me forget they were on the premises. He administered my first dose himself, then took his leave, saying I was free to eat and drink anything I pleased, and in any quantity I liked. But I was not hungry anymore, and did not care for food. I took up the Christian Scientist book, and read half of it, then took a dipper full of drench, and read the other half. The resulting experiences were full of interest and adventure. All through the rumblings and grindings and quakings and effervescings accompanying the evolution of the ache into the bots, and the cold into the blind staggers, I could note the generous struggle for mastery going on between the mash, and the drench and the literature, and often I could tell which was ahead, and could easily distinguish the literature from the others, when the others were separate, though not when they were mixed. For when a bran mash and an eclectic drench are mixed together they look just like the apodictical principle out on a lark, and no one can tell it from that. The finish was reached at last, the evolutions were complete, and a fine success, but I think that this result could have been achieved with fewer materials. I believe the mash was necessary to the conversion of the stomach ache into the boots, but I think one could develop the blind staggers out of the literature by itself. Also, that blind staggers produced in this way would be of a better quality, and more lasting than any produced by the artificial processes of a horse doctor. For of all the strange, and frantic, and incomprehensible, and uninterpretable books which the imagination of man has created, surely this one is the prize sample. It is written with a limitless confidence and complacency, and with a dash and stir and earnestness which often compel the effects of eloquence, even when the words do not seem to have any traceable meaning. There are plenty of people who imagine they understand the book. I know this, for I have talked with them, but in all cases they were people who also imagined that there were no such things as pain, sickness, and death, and no realities in the world, nothing actually existent but mind. It seems to me to modify the value of their testimony. When these people talk about Christian Science they do as Mrs. Fuller did. They do not use their own language, but the books. They pour out the books showing incoherences, and leave you to find out later that they were not originating, but merely quoting. They seem to know the volume by heart, and to revere it as they would a Bible, another Bible, perhaps I ought to say. Plainly the book was written under the mental desolations of the third degree, and I feel sure that none but the membership of that degree can discover meanings in it. When you read it, you seem to be listening to a lively and aggressive and oracular speech delivered in an unknown tongue, a speech whose spirit you get, but not the particulars. Or, to change the figure, you seem to be listening to a vigorous instrument which is making a noise it thinks is a tune, but which to persons not members of the band, is only the martial tooting of a trombone, and merely stirs the soul through the noise, but does not convey a meaning. The book's serenities of self-satisfaction do almost seem to smack of a heavenly origin, they have no blood kin in the earth. It is more than human to be so placidly certain about things, and so finely superior, and so airily content with one's performance, without ever presenting anything which may rightfully be called by the strong name of evidence, and sometimes without even mentioning a reason for a deduction at all, it thunders out the startling words, "I have proved so and so." It takes the Pope and all the great guns of his church in battery assembled to authoritatively settle and establish the meaning of a soul and single unclarified passage of scripture, and this at vast cost of time and study and reflection. But the author of this work is superior to all that. She finds the whole Bible in an unclarified condition, and at small expense of time, and no expense of mental effort, she clarifies it from lid to lid, reorganizes and improves the meanings, then authoritatively settles, and establishes them with formulae which you cannot tell from "Let there be light." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and here you have it. Apostrophe, it is the first time since the dawn days of creation that a voice has gone crashing through space with such placid and complacent confidence and command. IV, a word upon a question of authorship. Not that quite, but, rather, a question of emendation and revision. We know that the Bible Annex was not written by Mrs. Eddy, but was handed down to her 1800 years ago by the angel of the Apocalypse. But did she translate it alone, or did she have help? There seems to be evidence that S.E. had help. For there are four several copyrights on it: 1875, 1885, 1890, 1894. It did not come down in English, for in that language it could not have acquired copyright. There were no copyright laws 18 centuries ago, and in my opinion no English language, at least up there. This makes it substantially certain that the Annex is a translation. Then, was not the first translation complete? If it was, on what grounds were the later copyrights granted? I surmise that the first translation was poor, and that a friend or friends of Mrs. Eddy mended its English three times, and finally got it into its present shape, where the grammar is plenty good enough, and the sentences are smooth and plausible, though they do not mean anything. I think I am right in this surmise, for Mrs. Eddy cannot write English today, and this is argument that she never could. I am not able to guess who did the mending, but I think it was not done by any member of the Eddy Trust, nor by the editors of the Christian Science Journal, apostrophe, for their English is not much better than Mrs. Eddy's. However, as to the main point, it is certain that Mrs. Eddy did not doctor the Annex's English herself. Her original, spontaneous, undoctored English furnishes ample proof of this. Here are samples from recent articles from her unappeasable pen. Double columned with them are a couple of passages from the Annex. It will be seen that they throw light. The italics are mine. 1. What plague spot, therefore the efficienter bacilli were sick, gnawing remedy is to destroy the sick, at the heart of this patient's unfortunate belief, Metropolis. And bringing by both silently and audibly it on bended knee? Arguing the opposite facts in why, it was an institute, that regard to harmonious, being that entered its vitals sick, representing man as that, among other things, healthful instead of diseased, taught games, apostrophe etc. P. and showing that it is 670, C. S.S. Journal, article impossible for matter to suffer, entitled A Narrative by To Feel Pain or Heat, to be Mary Baker G. Eddy. Apostrophe, thirsty or sick. P. 375, Annex. 2. Parks sprang up, sick, electric streetcars run, man is never sick, for sick, merrily through several mind is not sick, and matter streets, concrete sidewalks cannot be. A false belief and macadamized roads dotted is both the tempter and the sick, the place, apostrophe etc. Tempted, the sin and the ibid. Sinner, the disease and its three. Shorn, sick, of its cause. It is well to be calm suburbs it is indeed little in sickness. To be hopeful is left to admire, save to sick, still better. But who such as fancy a skeleton understand that sickness is not above ground breathing sick, real, and that truth can slowly through a barren, sick, destroy it, is best of all, for breast. Ibid. It is the universal and perfect remedy. Chapter Zion. Annex. You notice the contrast between the smooth, plausible, elegant, adult English of the doctor Annex and the lumbering, ragged, ignorant output of the translator's natural, spontaneous, and unmedicated penwork. The English of the Annex has been slicked up by a very industrious and painstaking hand, but it was not Mrs. Eddy's. If Mrs. Eddy really wrote or translated the Annex, her original draft was exactly in harmony with the English of her plague spotter bacilli which were gnawing at the insides of the metropolis, and bringing its heart on bended knee, thus exposing to the eye the rest of the skeleton breathing slowly through a barren breast. And it bore little, or no resemblance to the book as we have it now that the salaried polisher has wholly stoned all of the genuine entities out of it. Will the plague spot article go into a volume just as it stands? I think not. I think the polisher will take off his coat and vest and cravat and demonstrate over it a couple of weeks, and sweat it into a shape something like the following, and then Mrs. Eddy will publish it and leave people to believe that she did the polishing herself. 1. What injurious influence was it that was affecting the city's morals? It was a social club which propagated an interest in idle amusements, disseminated a knowledge of games, etc. 2. By the magic of the new and nobler influences, the sterile spaces were transformed into wooded parks, the merry electric car replaced the melancholy bus, smooth concrete the tempestuous plank sidewalk, the macadamized road the primitive corduroy, etc. 3. Its pleasant suburbs gone, there was little left to admire save the wrecked graveyard with its uncanny exposures. The Annex contains one sole and solitary humorous remark. There is a most elaborate and voluminous index, and it is preceded by this note. This index will enable the student to find any thought or idea contained in the book. V. No one doubts, certainly not I, that the mind exercises a powerful influence over the body. From the beginning of time, the sorcerer, the interpreter of dreams, the fortune teller, the charlatan, the quack, the wild medicine man, the educated physician, the mesmerist, and the hypnotist have made use of the client's imagination to help them in their work. They have all recognized the potency and availability of that force. Physicians cure many patients with a bread pill. They know that where the disease is only a fancy, the patient's confidence in the doctor will make the bread pill effective. Faith in the doctor. Perhaps that is the entire thing. It seems to look like it. In old times the king cured the king's evil by the touch of the royal hand. He frequently made extraordinary cures. Could his footman have done it? No, not in his own clothes. Disguised as the king, could he have done it? I think we may not doubt it. I think we may feel sure that it was not the king's touch that made the cure in any instance, but the patient's faith in the efficacy of a king's touch. Genuine and remarkable cures have been achieved through contact with the relics of a saint. Is it not likely that any other bones would have done as well if... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.